I am very grateful to be with all of you today. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you, and thank you for being with us today. The topic I was given is no God, no peace, no God, and no peace. In the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, there is a verse in the fifth chapter which the great acharyas or spiritual teachers have declared to be the peace formula. Bhoktaram yagyatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam kyatvamam shanti mrichchati. That to understand these simple principles and to apply them to one's life empowers one not only to experience true peace, but to be an instrument of that peace. The first principle is to understand that everything is the property of Ishvara, or the Supreme Lord. Everyone, whoever we may be, is some sort of a little Ishvara. We have control. We have control over the choices we make. We may have some control over some property, over some people. But ultimately, there is a power above our own. We must grow old. We must get diseased. We must die. And within the realm of time in which we are living, there are just so many powers that are beyond ourselves. There's government powers. There's people who may be adverse to us. There's our own limitations. Proprietorship means control. If I own something, nothing and no one can take it away. But dukalayam ashashvatam, eventually everything is taken away. Even our own abilities. We may work so hard to be a doctor, a surgeon, a person in business or industry, a speaker or a swami, whatever it may be. These skills are entrusted to us. And from a spiritual perspective, they are entrusted to us for a purpose. These skills are not my skills. They are the property of who entrusts it to us. And therefore, the real consideration in life that is critical is not what I want to do with these skills, but what Bhagavan, what God wants us to do with these skills. Certainly in this world, it's required that we have comforts, that we have some wealth, that we have the necessities of life and some of the pleasures of life. But that is secondary. What brings true fulfillment to life, what brings actual meaning and purpose to life, is that I'm using what I have been given for the purpose of the Creator who has given it. And what is that purpose? Atato brahma jigyasa. This human form of life is extremely rare. Of course, in a city of Bombay where there's about 15 million human beings, it doesn't seem so rare. But if you count the bacterias and the insects and all the other species of life within this universe, the human life is very rare. And the Atma, the living force that's seeing through the eyes, hearing through the ears, tasting through the tongue, feeling through the flesh, thinking through the brain and loving through the heart, that Atma, that spiritual force, when in a body, the body is alive. And when that living force leaves the body, no matter what any doctor or anyone does, the body is just matter. It's dead. The nature of that living force is we are all part of God. Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nityadas. Our true function, our Sanatan Dharma. We may have Dharma as a doctor or a nurse or a Swami or a business person, but our Sanatan Dharma, the Dharma of the Atma, is to serve with love, to be an instrument of God's compassion in everything we do. When we perform our particular occupational duties in this spirit of being an instrument of Krishna or God's compassion, then we are actually living according to the Dharma of the soul, Jiva Dharma. And then we can achieve real peace. This intelligence, all the abilities, all the property and wealth I have is the property of an all-merciful, all-loving, beautiful being who wants us to use it to be instruments of his compassion within this world. And samsadhir haritoshanam, the Bhagavad Purana tells, atapumbir vijastrestas varana shrama vibhagasha svanushtatasya dharmasya samsadhir haritoshanam. Whatever one's occupation, whatever one's status within society, our true success is when Krishna or God is pleased by our sincere efforts. And this is what pleases Ishwara. When we use what we have, not with selfishness, not with egoism, but with compassion. As doctors, people really see us as a friend in need. There is a saying in English, a friend in need is a friend indeed. Disease is a time of great need. Generally, a person comes to a doctor because they're helpless by themselves. Otherwise, why go to a doctor if you can fix yourself yourself? Why pay money? Why do all the traveling? Why take the medicines? People go to a doctor when they feel themselves helpless. They cannot help themselves anymore. Their family cannot help themselves anymore. Even their money cannot help themselves anymore. They need somebody else. And they turn to a doctor in that spirit. And in that setting, a doctor is like a god to them. People go to church to pray when they're in need, and they go to a doctor and kind of pray when they're in need. Please help me. From a moral, ethical perspective, when people approach you that way, you have an incredible, immense responsibility. If they're approaching you like a god, you have the responsibility to be a proper representative of that god that's giving you your power. and we're responsible to that person, that we give them the very, very best. We're karmically responsible and spiritually responsible. Suhridam sarvabhutanam. When we think, I am the friend of this person, according to the Gita, that is an illusion that disrupts your whole life. There can be no peace in that state, as long as you think that I am the doer. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha. This is a basic principle of Dharma, that I am not the doer, that there is a power beyond my own that is working through me. But I have the free will who I want to work through me. Is it going to be my own selfish ego, or is it going to be the grace of God? So when we recognize that Krishna is the dear, intimate friend, father, and mother of all living beings, and when we take a position of leadership, we are like an elder brother or an elder sister who was meant to help that person on behalf of the mother and father. These three principles the Gita tells, to understand that Krishna, Ishvara, or God, whatever name we may have, is the proprietor of all that exists, including my abilities, my intelligence, and all my wealth. That everything is ultimately meant to be used in harmony with his will, which is for the compassion and well-being of all living beings. And that ultimately he is the supreme friend, and I am meant to be the instrument of the love of that friend. Disease has many levels. Diseases like malaria, cancer, AIDS, problems with the heart, these are physical diseases. And on a subtle level, there is emotional, psychological, or mental diseases. According to the World Health Organization, in the 21st century that we're living, mental illness will be one of the top three diseases that cause suffering and death. All over the world, it's becoming a trend, a rise in suicide. What to speak of some of the things we're seeing in America, which for so many years is a leading country in technology, in science, in economic growth, and in the schools, young people are literally shooting and killing their classmates and teachers. Not just once or twice or three times or four times, it's happening again and again. This is serious. These are symptoms of serious mental disease and how they're affecting others and how much fear and paranoia they're creating. There's a lot of disease in this world. There's ecological diseases. When our environment is being so highly polluted. Recently, I was in Vrindavan, Mathura, just 3 days back. The Yamuna River in the Himalayas and Yamunotri, it's coming down in its pure, transcendent form. Pure water coming from the glaciers of the Himalayan mountains. It's flowing down to the mountains, through the forests and the jungles. In Haryana, it is dammed and it is shut. and it's a dry riverbed for many, many miles, and you come to Delhi, and there's massive quantities of sewage and industrial waste that's poured in that riverbed, and that's what flows to Vrindavan as the Yamuna. Not only to Vrindavan, all the way to Prayag, Allahabad. And tens and millions of people are bathing there and using that as a water supply. And according to scientific research, it's thousands and thousands of times more polluted with deadly bacteria than in what is admissible for a human being. When we're creating such pollution, that is an ecological disease within our planet. But what is the root cause of that disease? That is what the holy scriptures and the saints and the great yogis are trying to impress upon us. That disease, its root cause is losing our own connection with God, with the divine. Putting other priorities above our actual Sanatan Dharma, to serve God with devotion and to serve all living beings with compassion. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmanika vihastini. Suni chaiva swapake cha pandita samadarshana. The Bhagavad Gita explains who is actually really educated. What is true wisdom? It's not just about how much data is stored in our brain or how many degrees we may have in any subject. Real wisdom is the ability to see every living being with equal vision. To see beyond the external dress, vasam sujirnani yatavihaya, of the bodies, and see who is the person wearing the dress. What is the Atma? Maybe in the dress of a man or woman, of a person who may be black or red or yellow or brown, a person from the east or west, Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Jewish, Jain, Sikh, Parsi, agnostic, atheist, a person may be in a dress of a human or an elephant or a cow or a dog. Wherever there's life, life is sacred. And wisdom is to honor that every living being is a part of God. Mamayavam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Krishna tells in Gita, all life, every being is part of me. Amani namanadena. To respect life. To serve life. That is wisdom. That is knowledge. And unfortunately, in today's world, people are losing connection to what's actually substantial. We honor people because of what they have. We honor people because of what they could do. We honor people because of what status they may be in. But an actual cultured society honors people according to these qualities. How much a person has compassion, integrity. My guru, Srila Prabhupada, he would tell us when he was living in Vrindavan, there was this very little old Bengali widow. Nobody knew about her. Nobody even knew where she lived. She just had the same set of old white cloth that she wore as a sari. And where Prabhupada was living, the Radha Damodar temple, he would see every morning she would come with a she was very old, with a bucket of water from the Yamuna, and bring it for Thakurji, for Krishna, and just leave it outside. And she honored and respected everyone. And here, a great scholar, a great saint, is going around the world talking about her. Because she had devotion. She had integrity. She had substance. When we honor integrity and selfless compassion, then we are becoming cultured. And if anything, this is the gift of Indian culture. When my Gurudev Srila Prabhupada was in London, somebody challenged him. He said, "Why have you come to our country? We have our own religion. We have our own society. Why have you come?" He said, "Your British Empire subjugated and controlled India for almost two centuries. And in every way possible, you tried to take the wealth and the treasures of India and bring it to London. I said, but you forgot. You forgot the greatest treasure. You may have brought the jewels and the diamonds and the gold and the thrones and so many other things, but the great treasure of India is the spiritual culture, which creates a foundation of integrity and compassion and devotion." He said, "I have come to give you what you forgot to take." And when we have prominence, we have influence. When there is prominence over anyone's life, what to speak of society at large, we should take it as a great responsibility to be instruments of that love for God, instruments of God's compassion in whatever we do. What is that disease that is the root cause of all of these pollutions and other diseases in the world? According to the Gita, and actually all the great scriptures of the world, that disease is ahankar, the false ego. We've forgotten who we really are, and we're trying to serve our selfish, egoistic ways rather than actually understanding that real fulfillment, real pleasure is in serving God and serving other living beings. And to the degree that service is based on unconditional love, it gives real pleasure to the heart. Enechi ashadi maya nashi barulagi harinama mahamantra lao tumi magi. One great saint, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, quotes Sri Chaitanya with this beautiful song that I have come as a doctor, and I have come with the medicine for this disease. This disease which is the cause of all suffering and illusion, the cause of all wars, the cause of all pollution, the cause of death itself. And that is forgetfulness of who we really are and what is our true dharma. And in this age of Kali, there's a very simple medicine to awaken that health within us. And that is the chanting of God's holy names. It is a medicine. It heals the heart. When we build the home of our life on a foundation of these spiritual principles, which bring about real character and integrity, than the storms of life. Neither do they really disturb our mind, nor can they distract us from our real purpose. This is a beautiful building, but it all stands on a foundation. It's very crucial that we have this spiritual foundation in our life. Otherwise, we can build a very, very beautiful structure with wonderful architectural ornaments, beautiful furniture. But when a storm comes, it all crumbles. So we can have many titles, we could have fame, we could have wealth, we can have skills. But when the storms of life come, will we still have character and integrity? Will we still have peace of mind? Will we still be able to unconditionally love? I will end by telling you a little story. I first came to India in 1970. I hitchhiked from London because I had no money. When I arrived here, I didn't know anyone. And I was trying to find something with real spiritual substance in my life. I was born in a middle-class family in the Midwest of America. And economically, physically, I had everything I could want or need. But there was something missing. What is the purpose of life? What is truth? Why is there so much greed and envy and anger among people who have so much? And I didn't see much quality of happiness between the people in the ghetto and the people who were living in beautiful mansions. What is real happiness? And as I was reading and studying, my conclusion is, if there's anywhere to find out, it's India. So I hitchhiked across Europe and the whole Middle East to come to your country to find out the message of your culture. And ultimately, I was living in a cave in the Himalayan jungles, meeting yogis, meditating, praying. And I would write back to my parents, "How would you like to get a letter from your 19-year-old son that he's living in a cave in the Himalayan jungles?" Well, because you're all cultured people from India, you may really be proud. But my parents were terrified. But ultimately, many years later, this was in 1970, in 1989, Dr. Desai, who is with us today, he convinced my mother and father, "Come to India to see what your son is doing." So they came to Mumbai. And meeting the people of India, seeing the true culture of compassion and service and unconditional love of the people they were meeting in India completely transformed their lives. And they're popular people in America. My father can show you photographs. He likes to show them too, with some of the most famous people of the whole country, entertainers, sports people, politicians. But he and my mother would say the finest people we ever met in our lives are the people of India. To this day. So anyways, they were meeting people and they were crying and happiness every night. They were so proud and so enriched. But we decided to show them someplace because after, you know, they were just with people, they no sightseeing. So the first place we took them on a sightseeing trip was the Elephanta Island. So myself, my mother, my father, Raghunath, one other, we went on a ferry across some little part of the Arabian Sea, and then we got off. And then this was in 1989. We were walking through a field, I mean, through a little path going to these old caves. And as we were walking, suddenly a large male brown monkey jumped right in front of my mother and showed his teeth and screamed. And with his green eyes, he stared in my mother's eyes with such wrath. I used to study monkeys when I lived in the jungle. They are masters at intimidation, even among themselves. They know how to make sounds and make expressions that intimidate somebody so much that usually they don't even have to fight. The person just gets so scared they can exploit in any way they want. So this big male monkey was intimidating my mother, and he was successful, showing his shiny pointed teeth and making these screams and looking at her like he was about to eat her. She was trembling. And then he grabbed her purse. There was a problem. In that purse was all the valuables of my mother and father. Their passports, in those days, their airline tickets, their credit cards, all their cash, my mother's jewelry, everything was in that purse. The monkey pulled, my mother pulled, the monkey pulled, my mother pulled. They were pulling and tugging, and I went to get a stick to try to chase the monkey away, but when he saw I was going for a stick, he went into his emergency mode. And he screamed really loud and jumped right into my mother's face. And kicked her with his hind legs right in the chest. And to say the least, this was culture shock for a lady from the Midwest of America. And she let go of the purse. The monkey took it and ran away, and about a half a block, he climbed up this huge peepal tree and started opening it. My father looked at me and said, "Now what? Everything is in that purse." And my mother looked at me and said, she was trembling. She said, "You brought us here." So I was helpless. The monkey's on that tree. So I closed my eyes and said a little prayer. Because helpless situations can really inspire us to turn to a higher power. And I, "Please, Krishna, help." So I opened my eyes. And I saw just down that little dirt road was a fruit vendor with a push cart. So I ran over to the fruit vendor and I asked him for a banana. I think he wanted 10 rupees for a banana. In those days, you could get about 3 bananas or 5 bananas for a rupee. He wanted 10 rupees, but I didn't have money. My mother didn't have money. My father didn't have money. The monkey had all the money. So I negotiated, and he was very, very firm. So I have to confess, I stole a banana and ran away. He was very angry, started running after me. But then some other monkey jumped on his cart when he went away. So he ran back in order to protect himself from one thief. He let another thief go. And I ran over and I showed the monkey the banana. Do you know what he was doing at that moment? He was passionately chewing on my mother's American Express card. And I threw the banana, and I wasn't good at throwing, which was actually favorable, because the monkey had to jump to get the banana, but as he jumped, he let go of the purse. And I brought it back to my mother. They were so proud of me. My father said, "That was brilliant. You are a genius. You tricked that monkey." And my mother said, "That was so intelligent of you. We didn't know you had so much intelligence." Anyways, they were very proud. And then my monkey took my mother, she took out 10 rupees and said, "Go give it to the fruit vendor." I forgot about that. So the fruit vendor was happy, my parents were happy, I was happy, and I looked up and the monkey was eating that banana. He was very happy. I guess we could call this a win-win solution. Now, why am I telling you this story? The mind is like a monkey. When the mind is affected by the ego, it's always looking to try to get something, to get more fame, to get more prestige, to get more power, to get more money, to get more sensual pleasures. The mind is always jumping from branch to branch, trying to find something else, something more. It's never satisfied. But the Gita says, "Param drisva nivartate." If we experience something higher, something deeper, then the mind no longer needs to do all that. What is dharma? What is bhakti? To experience the actual depth of real fulfillment that is within our hearts. Through our love for God, our compassion for others, to experience that we are Satchit-Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. When we connect to that inner fulfillment, we find so much peace that we don't have to jump around like a monkey stealing purses. We have a real banana, an everlasting banana of that inner peace, of God's grace. And this is the great contribution of India, and this is the essence of life, to reconnect with that peace within ourself. That love. And in whatever we do in life, to be an instrument of compassion. Thank you very much.